the builders came crashing and stumbling through the darkness and into a pitch-black recess. It was Beecher's old tunnel. Lights were brought in, and the awed workers looked around. At the far end of it was Beecher's wondrous excavating shield, its wooden frame disintegrated to the touch. And farther back, inside the tunnel, a vehicle awaited its next run. The pneumatic train, decomposed with dry rot, was still sitting on the tracks, waiting for a rush hour that would never come.
Andrew Sachs was reading The Pneumatic Underground from Banvard's Folly by Paul Collins. It was abridged by Richard Hamilton and produced by Jane Ray. Well, tomorrow we'll hear the story of an idealistic French music teacher who, long before anyone dreamed up Esperanto, invented a universal language which actually seemed to work.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock and time for drama in the shape of The Lady's Delight by Emile Zola. Then Mel gets a special tour of the illustrator Quentin Blake's studio in the 4 o'clock show. There's a great lineup in tonight's comedy club, the incisively observational wit of David Sedaris at 10, followed by a sitcom starring Bill Bailey as a reluctant new monk, and a surreal hour with Simon Munnery in The League Against Tedium at 11. Now we begin a two-part adaptation of a simmering love story set in one of Paris's first department stores in the mid-19th century.
The Lady's Delight by Emile Zola, dramatised by Karine Adler. Paris, October 1865. Denise Baudou and her two brothers arrived at the Gare Saint-Lazare on the Cherbourg train, after a night spent on the bench of a third-class carriage. Denise, small for her age and dressed in mourning clothes, held Pepe by the hand, while Jean, splendid in the blush of his 16 years, walked behind.
Oh, I know, my darling. Shh, 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 shh. Be patient.
How far is it, Twinkles?
I don't know. Will you ask the way, Jean?
Please, sir. The Rue de la Machurie.
The buildings. Aren't they tall?
Jean, don't dawdle. Stay close to me.
You all right, Denise?
I'm worried, Jean.
Why?
We had to leave Alonia so quickly, I didn't have time to write to Uncle.
He doesn't know we're coming.
No, but I'm sure he'll take us in. I don't know what we'll do if he doesn't. Ask again, Jean.
Rue de la Michaudière, please, sir.
Carry on until you get to the Place d'Orléans.
I'm tired.
Here, take the basket, Jean. I'll carry Pepe.
I'm tired too, Denise. I didn't sleep all night.
Well, nor did I. But we'll be there soon. Oh, look at that, Jean.
Now that's what I call a shop.
They were in front of a huge draper shop, its brightly coloured displays gleaming in the soft, pale October light.
It's beautiful.
Where you weren't as big.
The high doors overlooking the Place Gaillon, made entirely of glass and surrounded with gilded sculptures, reached up to the first floor. Two figures, laughing women with bare breasts thrust forward, were unrolling a scroll bearing the inscription,
"The Lady's Delight."
That's nice. I bet that draws in the crowds.
But Denise was gazing at the mountain of cheap goods displayed on the pavement to attract the women going past.
Look, they're selling mittens for 5 sous. Tartans for 1 franc.
Come on, let's go.
Oh, wait a minute. I want to look at this window display. Oh, the velvets and the satins are amazing. Oh, and they've got silks in every colour of the rainbow. There's the Paris Bonheur. Oh, it's a wonderful new silk. Everyone's talking about it. And they're selling it for only 5 francs 90.
Hurry up, Denise.
Oh, heavens. I forgot all about Uncle.
Excuse me, sir. Rue de la Machurière.
Oh, you're in it.
So, Uncle's shop must be here. Somewhere.
There it is, Denise.
Across the road, Denise noticed the washed-out sign, Drapery Boudou. The house, coated with rusty paint, looked quite dilapidated next to the surrounding buildings. Through the deep and dusty windows, the merchandise could hardly be seen. The shop door seemed to lead into the darkness of a cellar.
Oh, let's go in.
Now.
Move my hand, Pepe. Monsieur Boudou?
That's me.
Oh, thank goodness. I'm Denise.
Hello, Uncle.
This is my brother Jean. Mm-hmm. And that's Pepe. We're here.
What do you mean? What do you mean you're here?
I'm sorry, Uncle, but I am...
You're supposed to be in Valognes. Why aren't you in Valognes?
Because since Father and Mother died, I haven't been able to earn enough to keep us. So when a gentleman offered Jean an apprenticeship in Paris, I followed him. I thought that Pepe and I will we'd manage somehow.
Oh dear, oh dear. Elizabeth! Genevieve! Come down, quick!
Denise didn't mention Jean's love affair. Letters written to the young daughter of a nobleman. Kisses exchanged over a wall. Quite a scandal.
What is it, dear?
Madame Boudou was small and exhausted by anemia. Her daughter, Genevieve, had even less colour than her mother. She looked like a plant which had grown in the dark.
Oh, poor children. They must be exhausted.
Please, sit down, cousin. Oh, thank you. Oh, come on my lap, Pepe.
Oh, what a sweet little boy. Is he always so quiet?
Oh, yes, Auntie. He never makes a noise. Sometimes he goes for whole days without saying a word.
Oh.
Now, listen to me, Denise. I wrote, it's true, but that was a year ago. And since then, business hasn't been going well. Oh, it'll pass. But for the moment, I've had to reduce my staff. So, you see, I can't possibly take you on, my poor girl. It wouldn't be good for you or for us.
I'm sorry, Uncle. Don't worry. We'll go.
I'm not going to turn you away. Now you're here, you might as well stay the night. Tomorrow, we'll see.
Oh, so, everything's settled. Jean has his board and lodging, and as for Pepe, well, Madame Gras can take care of him. She only charges 40 francs for full board.
I can pay the first month, but I have to find work.
No one's hiring at the moment, except for that scoundrel Octave Moray.
Father, I heard Van Car was looking for a sales girl.
Good idea. We'll go and see him after lunch.
Oh, yes.
It won't take long.
The family were seated in the cramped dining room at the back of the shop. A single window opened on a gloomy courtyard, which communicated with the street by a dark alleyway at the side of the house. And this courtyard, damp and filthy, was like the bottom of a well, into which fell a circular glimmer of light. Boudou carved a piece of cold veal, weighing each meagre portion at a glance within an ounce.
Come on, come and eat.
Sorry, sir, I'm putting away the flannels.
There's a time and a place for everything, Columbine.
Yes, sir.
And we have to make room. Come on, squeeze together. Sit here, Jean.
Your uncle,
come next to me, Pepe.
So, Denise, tell me, why didn't you get married in Valognes?
Me? Married, Uncle? No man would want a girl like me. Anyway, I promised I'd never get married because of my brothers.
You're wrong. A woman always needs a man. Take Genevieve and Colomban. If the winter season goes well, they'll be married in spring. Isn't that so, Colomban?
Yes, sir.
You see, Denise, it's the tradition in this shop for the first assistant to marry the employer's daughter. And once business improves, I'll hand the shop over to Genevieve and Colombin. Oh, Jean's finished already.
No, Uncle.
Now, there's a lad with a good appetite. Come on, eat up, Denise. The sooner we get to Vancar, the better. Jobs are hard to come by nowadays.
Vancar's shop was in the Rue Neuve de Petit Champ. It was clean and light, but small and poorly stocked.
Good afternoon, Vancar.
Afternoon, monsieur.
Baudou. Hey, have you heard the latest? That idiot Varbra's come a cropper.
No, not him too.
Yep, he's ruined. Of course, I knew it would happen. His shop's right next to the Delight.
That wretched shop will destroy us all.
Yeah, well, not me. I'm selling up.
No, Vancar. Us small shopkeepers must stick together.
Anyway, what can I do for you today?
I've come to introduce you to my niece.
Monsieur.
She's been working in the provinces, and as I know, you're looking for a good sales girl.
Oh, well, no, not anymore. Someone took the job about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, your bad luck.
Look, you won't like it, Baudou, but...
Well, what about the Delight?
I've heard they're hiring in the ladies' department.
In there? With them?
Oh, what's she got to lose? If I was you, I'd take her to see Madame O'Reilly in the morning.
On the way back, Baudou didn't say a word to his niece. He walked fast, as if lost in thought, forcing her to run after him. He was about to enter his shop when a shopkeeper beckoned him over. It was old Bourras.
Hey, Baudou!
What is it, my friend?
Old Bourras sold walking sticks and umbrellas, which he had lined up in the window of his shop. Denise was surprised at the appearance of the building, which was squashed between the Lady's Delight and the magnificent Hotel du Villard.
I've just received a letter from my landlord. Murray wants to buy the building.
We must be ready for anything nowadays.
He can pay 4 times what it's worth, but as long as I live, he won't get a stone. I've got 12 years left on my lease, and we'll see what we'll see.
It was a declaration of war.
Pass the salt, Genevieve.
Yes, Father.
So, what happened with Vancar?
The job's gone. He suggested we try over there. Yes, there! In the Lady's Delight.
They've got plenty of customers, at least.
All that glistens is not gold, Denise.
Oh, if only you knew what kind of a place it was.
Some bread for Pepe. Oh, thank you.
Oh, when I think of that monster, it makes my blood boil.
He's a terrible man, that Octave Maury.
He's a rogue, Denise. An adventurer from Provence.
He's destroying our small shopkeepers.
I'm doing fine. Although he does his best to annoy me. Have you ever heard of a shop that sells everything? No. It's not a shop, it's a bazaar. Don't you agree, Colander?
Oh, yes, sir.
As for the staff, they don't know the meaning of loyalty. Not like you, Colander.
No, sir.
And you're the last of the old stock because you know the art is not to sell a lot, but to sell it expensively.
That's right, sir.
Anyway, Denise, we don't want to influence you in any way. It's entirely your own decision.
The next morning at 7:30, Denise was waiting outside the Lady's Delight.
Excuse me, mademoiselle, but are you by any chance a sales girl in there? Because I'm looking for a job and maybe you could help me.
I'm sorry, I'm looking for work too.
Oh. Oh, I see. I hope it goes well for you, mademoiselle.
Oh, and you, monsieur?
The employees were still arriving when Denise caught sight of a young man hurrying towards them.
Morning, sir.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, monsieur.
Yeah, very good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
He was obviously the head of department because the staff greeted him respectfully. He was tall, with clear skin, and his eyes the colour of pale gold rested on her for a moment before he disappeared into the shop. Denise felt herself blush, quite overwhelmed by his look. The man who had such a deep effect on Denise was not just the head of a department, but Octave Mouret himself.
Octave!
Ah, there you are, Boudon.
How are you feeling this morning, Octave?
Me? I haven't slept all night. I was at the ball with Madame Desforges. Mm-hmm. I must say, she looked enchanting.
I take it you didn't spend the night with her?
Of course not. Far too respectable, old boy. Now, I spent the night with Eloise from the Follies. Not too bright, but so amusing.
You do realise one day a woman will come along and she'll avenge all the others.
Well, that one isn't born yet, my friend. And if she is, she'd better watch out.
All this gallivanting around town. Really, Octave, you'll exhaust yourself.
You're the one who looks tired, old chap. You really should find yourself a woman.
I'll leave that to you.
Pity. It would do you the world of good.
I'm too busy. Now, here are the accounts for you to look at. I'm worried, Octave. The figures don't look good. You can't continue expanding. You've got to stop.
Forget it, Boudon. The shop's too small.
Too small with 19 departments and 403 employees?
I guarantee that we'll need to get bigger within the year. Last night, Madame Desfours said she'd introduce me to a potential backer tomorrow. I'll tell you about it some other time.
You know I'll always follow you to the end, Octave.
Yes. Now, come on. It's time to go downstairs and organise this sale. Yes. The silk arrived yesterday, didn't it? I want to take a look at it.
Octave?
The receiving department was in the basement on the side of the Rue Neuve Saint-Augustin. There, level with the pavement, was a glass cage in which the vans discharged their merchandise.
Feel the quality of the Paris Bonheur, Octave.
I want it marked down to 5 francs 60.
5.60? You do realise it's no more than we paid for it?
If it was up to me, Boudon, I would give it away.
We're already selling it at a loss. Everyone sells it at 7 francs.
So what? If it brings us all the women. Once we've got them, they'll spend all their money without looking. All we've got to do, old chap, is excite them.
Mouret and Boudon next moved onto the shop floor to start their tour of inspection around the departments. At this time of the morning, the employees were getting ready for the day.
I say, Boudon, what's going on? What's that salesman doing? You there?
Me, Monsieur Mouret, sir.
Yes, you. Where have you put the velvets?
I'm sorry, Monsieur, but there ain't enough space.
What did I tell you, Boudon? The shops are too small. This display is dull. It's boring. Here, you've got to be bold. You have to blind the woman. You have to attract their eye. There. Oh, that's better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is, sir. Yeah.
You're a genius, Octave.
One thing for sure, the women will love it.
Look, there's one already.
It was Denise, who, having hesitated for an hour, had finally ventured in and had stumbled straight into Mouret's display. Despite her fear, the woman in her was aroused. She blushed and forgot herself as she stared at the blazing display of silks.
I say, look at her, Boudoncle. She's never seen anything like it.
No wonder. She's a peasant.
Excuse me. Madame Aurélie, please.
All right, take the stairs. First floor, turn left. Ladies' wear's right in front of you.
Thank you so much, sir.
Ladies' wear. A vast room surrounded by tall wardrobes and windows overlooking the Rue de la Machaudière. Two salesgirls in silk dresses were busy putting away the clothes.
I say, Marguerite, who's that awful-looking girl?
Probably someone looking for a job.
She won't get far in here, that's for sure. She's wearing clogs!
Mademoiselle Radon, Mademoiselle Prunier, hurry up! The winter coats have arrived. Go and put them away.
Yes, of course, Madame Aurélie.
Why is that girl staring at me?
I don't know, Madame.
I suppose I'd better see what she wants. Can I help you?
Please, Madame, are you Madame Aurélie?
I am.
I heard you might be looking for a sales girl, Madame.
How old are you?
20, Madame.
20? You don't look a day over 16.
Oh, but I'm very strong.
Very well, I'll have to put you on the list. We have to put everyone down who presents themselves. Wait over there for a moment.
Yes, Madame.
Mademoiselle Prunier, fetch me the register.
Yes, Madame Aurélie. Oh, good morning, Monsieur Mouret.
Morning, morning. There she is again, Boudon. Madame Aurélie, who's that girl? What is she doing here?
She's applying for a job, Monsieur Mouret.
Surely not. She's far too ugly.
Now, Boudon, let's hear what she has to say.
Since when do you get involved with hiring the staff, Octave?
Since this minute, Boudoncle.
Here's the ledger, Madame Aurélie.
What's your name, child?
Denise Baudou, Mum.
And what establishment have you worked in?
Chez Corneille in Valogne, Madame. Here are my references.
Oh, I know it. Good firm. Why did you leave?
For family reasons, sir.
Good references. Look, Boudon.
And where are you living now?
With my uncle Baudu, in his shop across the road.
What? Your Baudu's niece? Did he send you here?
Oh, no, monsieur.
Denise couldn't help laughing because the idea seemed so peculiar to her. And the laugh transformed her. Her grey eyes were lit with a soft flame, her cheeks dimpled adorably, and even her fair hair seemed to glow in the merriment of her whole being.
She's quite pretty, Boudoncle.
Please, don't be ridiculous, Octave.
Why didn't you tell us you're Baudu's niece? Your uncle's recommendation would have been enough. I know he's angry with me, but if he can't find work for you in his shop, we'll show him his niece will be welcomed here. Oh. Isn't that so, Madame Morelli?
Yes, of course, Monsieur Morelli.
Denise had turned quite pale again. It was Moray. Now she understood why the sight of him had caused her such emotion in the street. And all the stories related by her uncle came back to her, increasing Moray's importance in her eyes, surrounding him with a sort of halo, the master of the terrible machine whose wheel she had felt herself caught in since morning.
Mademoiselle! Mademoiselle, we met outside this morning. Well, how did your interview go? Did you get the job?
I think so, monsieur.
Oh, I think so too. But they have such a way of looking at you and speaking to you in there. Would you mind very much if I ask you your name, mademoiselle?
It's Denise Baudu. And yours, sir?
Henri Deloche. Well, I hope I see you again.
I hope so too. And good luck.
Every Saturday between 4 and 6, Madame Deforge, Mouret's official mistress, offered tea and cakes to a group of intimate friends. A voluptuous woman, Henriette Deforge, adored Mouret deeply with the violence of a woman of 35 who admitted to 29 and was terrified of losing him.
I had my fan monogrammed with my initials. I bought a tortoiseshell mount. The lace alone cost me 30 francs a meter.
Do you think that's a bargain, Henriette?
Monsieur Moret.
Here he is, at last.
I can't wait to meet him.
If you'll excuse me a minute.
Henriette.
Octave.
Has the Baron arrived?
Not yet, my dear, but don't worry, he's coming.
Does he know what I want to ask him?
No, you can explain it yourself. What? We'd better go back in. They're waiting for me. Yes, Monsieur Moray.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Ah, oh, Monsieur Moray.
Tell us, Monsieur Moray, is it true what they're writing in the papers?
Have you really got exclusive rights to the Paris Bonheur?
Yes, quite true, madame. And I'll let you into a secret. We're marking it down to 560.
No!
No!
Yes, on my honour, we're selling it at a loss.
At a loss?
At a loss?
What did I tell you? You wouldn't believe me.
It's incredible.
I have to buy some.
Baron.
Hi. I absolutely... How lovely to see you, Baron.
My dear Henriette.
Baron, may I introduce you to my friend, Monsieur Octave Mouret? Octave has been dying to express his admiration for you.
Monsieur le Baron, it's an honour to shake your hand, sir. Your last deal at the Crédit Immobilier was a stroke of genius.
You're too kind, sir. Too kind.
Well, gentlemen, I'll leave you to talk.
May I take this opportunity, Baron, to say that I have the greatest admiration for the way you run your business.
Oh, thank you, monsieur.
So I'd like to talk to you about the extension of the Rue Rayomur. I understand that planning permission has been granted. Now, my ambition has always been to expand the ladies' delight across the whole neighbourhood. So when I heard that you're buying up all the houses in my block...
Rumours, monsieur, mere rumours.
But you've just bought the Hotel du Villard.
Where on earth did you hear that?
The truth is, I'm overextended at the moment. I've invested all my capital in my winter sale. But don't worry, I'm not here to ask you for money. No, my ambition runs much higher. What I want is a partnership with you, Baron Hartmann.
Is that so?
Yes, yes. Imagine if you and I join forces, if we pull down those old shops, all those derelict houses and build on your vacant land. We'll have the largest department store in Paris. I guarantee it will bring us in millions.
You run away with yourself, sir. What an imagination.
Monsieur le Baron, I know you're planning on opening a luxury hotel, but there would still be room to develop the rest of your site.
Yes, but not as a shop. It would be a disaster. Where would you find enough customers to fill such a huge building?
Where would I find enough customers? Why, there, right in front of you.
Oh, you should have seen what she was wearing at the ball. A mauve silk underskirt covered in flounces of old Alençon lace, 30 centimetres
oh,
deep.
Oh, I must see that.
Oh, it's the very latest fashion.
And you say she paid 25 francs for it. Do you still shop at Sauveur, Henriette?
Of course. Oh,
but she's so expensive.
Well, I can't stand being seen in something someone else is wearing.
But they say she buys all her materials at the latest delight.
You see, the ladies' wear business is based on continuous and rapid renewal of capital. This way, we can content ourselves with a very small profit of only 4%. But if we operate in large quantities, that small percentage will bring us in millions. Do you understand?
Yes, of course. You sell cheap in order to sell great quantities, but you must sell, and I repeat, who will you sell to on such a colossal scale?
One can sell what one likes, monsieur, when one knows how to sell. As long as you have the women with you, you can sell the world.
Wait until you see my bodice. I'm having the same one made up in satin. Oh,
what I wanted was the velvet. It was a bargain.
It's all about the women. It's woman the shops are competing for. Everything leads to it. Woman is the queen, and all I want is to build a temple to woman.
I bought 20 metres of guipure at 1 franc a metre.
Well, I never... What can you do with it?
I have no idea, but the pattern was so amusing.
At last, the Baron understood. His eyes twinkled knowingly. He was overtaken by admiration for the inventor of this machine for devouring women.
Monsieur Moray, it really isn't very gallant of you, monsieur, to bury yourself in a corner talking business. Come and join us.
Excuse me, sir. Ladies, I'm all yours.
Tell us about your winter.
So, Baron, what did you think?
Oh, you were right, Henriette. He is very charming.
Oh, he is, isn't he? Mm.
Careful, Henriette. A man like that, he'll devour you all.
Don't you know, Baron? It's always the lamb who ends up devouring the wolf.
I hope so, my dear. I hope so.
So, Baron, about my proposal. Are you with me?
On the Monday morning of the winter sale, the Lady's Delight blazed in the bright Paris sky. However, few people were going in. Only the small shopkeepers had gathered on the street to exchange bitter comments.
Did he have to buy so many vans?
He's making them drive all around Paris.
So, your niece has gone to work for the crook.
It's her decision, Bourras. So from now on, I want nothing more to do with her.
It was on that day that Denise happened to be starting work. It was the first time she was alone, away from her brothers. Jean had started his apprenticeship, and Pepe was settled with Madame Gras.
There are 20 other girls living down this corridor. This is your room, number 7. No visitors allowed. You can't go out without a pass. The front door is locked by 10. Now, hurry up and get changed and go downstairs.
Thank you.
Denise had been given a uniform, but it was too big for her. And when she entered the ladies' wear department...
You haven't got a clue, Mademoiselle Baudou. And do something with that mane of yours.
Look at her hair, Mockery. It looks like a broom brush.
Broom brush.
That's a good one.
The day before, Denise had been told she would join the firm without a fixed salary. Instead, she would only earn commission on goods she sold. She had worked out that 100 per month would allow her to pay for Pepe's board, to give something to Jean, and to leave a little over for herself.
Mademoiselle Baudou.
So you got the job? Me too. I'm in the lace department.
Oh, I'm so glad, Monsieur Deloche. Oh, but we can't talk now. It's against the rules.
Sorry, Mademoiselle Baudou. I won't disturb you. But I hope we can meet again. Oh. Another time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mouret had been going round the departments. And on finding them all empty, he'd been seized with a superstitious fear that the sale wasn't going to work, that all was lost, and he couldn't say why.
That's the 10:30 bell, and not one customer all morning.
It's a disaster.
Oh, I'm bored. I should have stayed in bed.
What if we do so badly they close down the shop?
I'm not bothered. I'm only here for the fun. My rich boyfriends can pay my rent.
A customer. At last. Madame Bouterelle, how nice to see you. And what can we do for you today? Quick, ladies, service, service.
Yes, Madame Orly.
The new girl? It's not her turn. I was here before her, Madame Orly.
Oh, but it's not true. She pushed in front of me.
I decide who does what, Mademoiselle Baudou. Well, go to the back and put away the clothes.
So, how's it going, Madame Aurélie?
It's not catching on, Monsieur Moret.
But I saw a customer.
Madame Bouterelle, but she didn't buy a thing.
Octave! There you are. I've been looking for you everywhere. Look, it's a disaster. We haven't sold a thing. There's no one. We're finished.
Leave me alone, Boudoncle. Go to hell, I tell you. It's going well.
Moret stood alone at the top of the stairs, overlooking the central hall. From this high vantage point, the emptiness below looked more desolate. Seeing the cashiers leaning against the empty tills, Mouret felt his great machine jammed still beneath him. But just as it got towards 2 o'clock, Mouret's faith returned. The afternoon crowd had started to arrive.
Hey, look! We're coming in.
Service, gentlemen, service!
Can I help, madame?
I want to see the silks. Where's the Paris Bonheur?
Follow me, madame.
I want some too.
This way, ladies, this way.
Here at last was what Mouret had been expecting. The crush which he'd imagined in his feverish dreams had finally arrived. His machine was suddenly beginning to come to life.
I've bought 4 pairs of gloves.
Oh, look, there's Madame Defarge, Bossy's girlfriend.
I hope she comes my way. I know how to get round her.
It's madness. What a crush.
Oh, it's stifling. I can hardly move.
Neither can I. Oh, look, Henriette. There's Monsieur Moray.
Oh, Octave! Octave! Oh, no, he's walking away.
Never mind. Let's go upstairs to the ladies' department. I want to buy a coat.
Yes, madame? I'm looking for a coat.
Yes, madame. What kind of coat would madame like?
How would I know?
Bring us what you've got.
Yes, of course, madame.
And hurry up. We haven't got all day.
Oh, I'm sorry, madame. So sorry.
My dear Madame Defarge, Madame Marty, are you being looked after, ladies?
Yes, by that girl over there, but she doesn't know what she's doing.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Madame Defarge. Mademoiselle Vadon?
Yes, madame.
Bring a selection of winter coats for these ladies. My apologies, madame. I assure you it won't happen again, but you know what it's like during the sales. Oh, here's Mademoiselle Vadon.
I've bought you the latest models, madame. This is a velvet coat trimmed in silver fox.
It's divine.
Mademoiselle Baudou, quick, make yourself useful. Try on the coat so madame can see what it looks like.
Yes, madame.
Stand straight, can't you?
Denise, despairing of ever succeeding in this shop, remained motionless in the coat, her hands dangling by her side. No doubt she would be dismissed and her brothers would starve. But she was immediately forgotten when Mouret appeared with Bouda.
Good afternoon, Madame Marty.
Henriette, everything is to your satisfaction?
Oh, yes, monsieur.
Congratulations, Octave. It's a big success.
Yes, I'm quite pleased. But we mustn't interrupt you ladies any longer.
Turn around, Mademoiselle Baudou, so we can see the back of the coat.
What do you think of it, Henriette?
Well,
It's original, but it doesn't fit around the waist.
Oh, it would look much nicer on Madame.
I must say, this girl hasn't got a clue.
I told you not to hire her, Octave.
She's so skinny. Just look at her baggy uniform. Don't you agree, Octave?
Yes, I do. And she could have combed her hair.
Well done, Mademoiselle Boudou. I don't want to see you. Stay in the back.
Denise felt defenseless, surrounded by these mocking people. What stung her most of all was the laughter of Mouret and Madame Defarge. Her heart felt pierced by some unknown pain.
Don't let them see you crying, dearie. They'll destroy you if you don't stand your ground.
They hate me. I don't know why.
Come on, be brave. Here, give me your hand. I'm Pauline Cugnot from Chartres.
Denise Baudou from Villogne.
Pleased to meet you, Denise. I'm next door in Woolens. Come and see me when you can and we'll have a nice chat.
Oh, thank you, Pauline. Thank you so much.
Towards the end of the day, the crowds finally began to leave. Outside, the rolling of the last cabs could be heard against the background of the thick voice of Paris. The snoring of an overfed ogre digesting the linens and sheets, the silks and lace, which had been gorged since that morning. Inside, the flaring of gaslights lit the last throes of the sale. It was like a battlefield, still hot from the massacre of the materials.
84,742 francs and 10 centimes.
No one has ever made this much in a day.
And we could have sold twice as much.
What did I tell you?
Oh, you were right, as always.
So, now, are you convinced the shop's too small?
That night, Denise fell exhausted onto her bed. This terrible, endless day had crushed her. A flood of tears welled up as she thought of Jean and Pepe. Without enough strength even to take off her shoes, she was overcome with tiredness and sorrow. The next morning, no sooner had Denise arrived for work...
Mademoiselle Baudou, you're wanted in the director's office.
Oh, yes, madame.
Come in.
Monsieur?
Ah, Mademoiselle Baudou. I engage you out of respect for your uncle, but I'm afraid... But you look quite different. What have you done?
I took in my uniform, sir. I worked all night.
Huh. Mouret looked at her. The silk dress now hugged her slender figure. And though her hair was still wild, she had at least tried to pull it back.
Well done. Except for all that hair. Come here. And let me try.
He stood up and tried to adjust her hair. She said nothing and let him put it right. But he saw how she trembled as his hand touched the nape of her neck. And he regretted his thoughtful gesture, afraid he might lose authority.
Anyway, mademoiselle, you're not in Valogna any longer. Make an effort. And look at the way all the Parisian women dress. And remember, I hired you because you showed promise. Monsieur Boudoncle doesn't share my opinion, so don't let me down.
Oh, I won't. Thank you, sir.
From that day on, Denise showed great courage. First of all, she had to overcome the dreadful work in the department. The parcels of clothes made her arms ache so much she would cry out. She suffered still more from her heavy shoes, which she could not afford to replace. But worse than all this, she had to endure the agony of having the department against her.
Here comes Broombrush. Excuse me.
Wearing her clogs again. What a racket you make with your shoes, Mademoiselle Baudou. It's really intolerable.
Then there was indignant amazement when Denise, after finding out how things worked, turned out to be a remarkable assistant.
That idiot sold 2 coats today, Marguerite. Gotta stop her. Don't let her near the customers. Push in front of her.
Then one night, a few weeks later, as she was tidying up the clothes...
Mademoiselle Baudou?
Oh, Monsieur Deloche?
There's a young man asking for you downstairs.
For me? I'll be down in a minute.
Well, I never.
The scarecrow, I said, offer.
Someone must be hard up.
Downstairs, by the door, Denise found her brother.
Jean? Oh, what are you doing here? I told you we're not allowed visitors.
I'm sorry, Denise, but have you got 10 francs? I must have 10 francs or I'm finished.
10 francs? Why? What happened?
I met this girl.
No, no, not again. Oh, Jean, last time I gave you 1 franc. Before that, it was 2, but 10? I can't give you 10. I've still got Pepe's nurse to pay. Honestly, Jean, it's bad of you not to think of Pepe when you do such stupid things.
Oh, if I don't have the money, then I'm done for, you see? There was this girl I took out of a cafe and then the bill came in.
No, Jean, no. I haven't got any money. I can't give you what I haven't got. I barely manage. If only you knew. Jean, please don't cry. Oh, you're breaking my heart, Jean. Very well. Here's 10 francs. Take it. Take it. Before I change my mind.
Oh, I knew you'd help me. Oh, it's the last time. Word of honour, Denise.
That night, Denise couldn't sleep for worrying about money. She was still a probationer with no fixed salary. And as the young ladies in the department prevented her from selling, she only just managed to pay Pepe's board and lodging.
Hurry up. It's me, Pauline. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. What's the matter? Your eyes are all red. Are you crying? Tell me what's wrong.
My brother took all the money I had. Now I haven't got any.
Oh, why didn't you tell me? I'd have lent you the money.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Why not? I've been through it too. Oh, yes. When I first arrived, I had nothing. So, you see, I understand what you're going through. Come on, sit down and tell me all your troubles.
Faced with such an offer of friendship, Denise gave in. Bit by bit, she opened up.
And the worst thing is, the girls in my department won't let me earn any commission.
Oh, the monsters.
And Monsieur Bourdoncle is always waiting to catch me out. Oh, the only one who's kind to me is Inspector Jouve.
Oh, I wouldn't trust him. He's an old rogue. Oh, you have got a lot to learn. Come on, give me a kiss. You poor little thing. Now, listen to me. You can't go on like this much longer. If I was you, I'd get myself someone.
What do you mean, get someone? I don't understand. Oh, I see. No, I couldn't.
Oh, you won't be able to manage without it. Do the sums. 40 francs for Pepe, a few centimes here and there for Jean. And you need money for food, for clothes, for a new pair of shoes. Look at you. You look like a pauper. That's why they're all laughing at you. Get someone and you'll see how quickly things improve.
No.
But it's perfectly natural. We all end up there in the end.
No, it's not for me.
What if you go with someone you're attracted to?
No.
Well, it's up to you. Anyway, it's getting late. I'd better go. Now, here's 6 francs.
Oh, yes,
I insist. I won't take no for an answer. And don't bother giving it back until you can afford to.
Spring came, and Denise was finally granted a salary of 300 francs. However, she was still an outcast in the ladies' wear department. For some time, Madame Aurélie had planned to invite everyone for Sunday lunch. It was her way of cold-shouldering Denise, who was the only one not invited.
Oh, those wretched girls! They make me so angry. If I was you, Denise, I'd get me own back. You have fun too. We're going out on Sunday. Beaujolais has taken me to the country. Come with us.
No, thank you, Pauline.
Why not? I want you to come.
Very well. As long as I pay my way.
So, the following Sunday, Denise wore her plain black woolen dress, but she'd made herself a bonnet trimmed with a blue ribbon. Pauline wore a pretty silk dress striped white and violet, and a feathered bonnet with matching bows.
I'm so glad I came. The air is so fresh, and there isn't a cloud in the sky.
I wouldn't like it to rain or we'd get soaked, but wouldn't it be fun if a cloud burst just over Madame Aurélie's party?
Imagine the look on Clara's face.
Along the riverbank, Denise lingered, behind Pauline and Beaujolais, walking along with their arms around each other under the tall poplars.
Come on, Pauline, my darling. One kiss. Just one.
Very well, then. But just one.
Denise looked away, plucked a handful of buttercups, and watched the water run past.
Oh, look, Denise. Isn't that your friend, Monsieur Deloche, coming towards us?
Oh, yes.
Isn't it funny? Wherever you go, he always turns up. He obviously likes you.
Oh, no. It's nothing like that. We just started on the same day, that's all.
If you say so.
Hello, Monsieur Deloche.
Hello, Mademoiselle Baudou. Hello, Mademoiselle Pauline. Baudet.
Hello, Deloche.
Isn't it a lovely day? I walked all the way from Paris. I was hoping to find you, Mademoiselle Baudou. Wouldn't you mind if I walked along with you?
No, of course not, Monsieur Deloche.
I didn't expect it to happen with him. But you see, my dear, in life, you never know.
I've been wanting to speak to you for so long, Mademoiselle Baudou.
What about?
Oh, Mademoiselle Baudou, you see, the truth is, I love you. I've tried writing to you about it, and if it wasn't for meeting you on this beautiful day, I'd never have dared tell you. You're very quiet. I haven't upset you, have I?
No, no.
Heavens, I don't want to offend you.
No, listen. I'm not in the least bit angry with you. Only please don't speak to me like that. What you ask is impossible. Oh, you're a good lad, and I'd like to be your friend, but nothing more. You understand? Just good friends.
I see. In other words, you don't love me. Well, of course you don't.
Please, don't be upset, Monsieur Deloche. Let's just enjoy the afternoon together. Goodness knows our life is hard enough.
Oh, yes. Now they kick us about from morning to night. Don't you wish you were home? Strolling through the green fields, surrounded by hedges.
Oh, or lying in the tall grass, under the shade of an overgrown tree.
You see, Mademoiselle Baudou, I knew we had a lot in common.
It was 8 o'clock when Denise got back home. The entrance to the staff quarters was in the Rue Neuve-Saint-Augustin. Denise pushed the door open and entered the shop. Someone moved on the first floor. Boots squeaked. Losing her head, Denise started running through haberdashery and the glove department. Huge shadows seemed to creep towards her. She could hardly distinguish the piles of merchandise, which assumed terrifying shapes of crouching beasts and lurking thieves.
What? It's you, Mademoiselle Baudou.
Monsieur Moret. I was looking for something.
You had a pass to go out, did you?
Yes, sir.
Huh. Did you enjoy yourself? Where did you go?
I went to the country, sir.
Alone?
No, sir. With a girlfriend. Good night, sir.
He did not answer. but remained there, watching her until she disappeared. At the arrival of the summer months, a climate of fear blew through the Lady's Delight. It was the terror of being laid off, of mass dismissals, brought in by the management as the shop emptied from the summer heat of July and August. Bourdoncle was in charge of the executions. Through thin lips would sound the terrible...
Go, pick up your wages.
Everything and anything was a pretext for a clean sweep.
You answered back. Pick up your wages.
He invented wrongdoings and pounced on the slightest inattention.
Your tie's crooked. Pick up your wages.
He stood at the door, watch in hand, and if you were 3 minutes late, they'd be the pitiless.
Pick up your wages.
One day he fell on a poor lad because he didn't like the shape of his nose.
You've got an ugly mug. Pick up your wages.
Denise lived in constant fear of dismissal. She could have no illusion. If an assistant from Ladies' Wear was to go, it would be her. Especially as she still despaired of ever winning the department over.
I say, Marguerite, have you heard the latest? Mademoiselle Baudou has a child.
Oh, but that's not true.
A child? Clara, well, I never.
How disgusting. I saw her with my own eyes. She was taking him for a walk.
Oh, but that was Pepe, my little brother. Oh, no, please. Ladies, believe me.
Don't make me laugh.
Come to think of it, Clara, the other day I saw her with a man. A workman, no less. A dirty workman with bright yellow hair. And he came right in the shop to see her.
No, that was my other brother, my brother Jean.
Do you know what?
She gave him money.
She's so ugly, she'd have to pay.
Be quiet, ladies. You'd do better to get on with changing these labels. Mademoiselle Baudou is quite free to misbehave outside, if only she would work when she was here.
Sometimes Denise would meet Pauline in the back of some out-of-the-way department, and they would chat for a few minutes, keeping careful watch.
50 employees have already been sacked. And the rumour is, there's a lot more to come.
Oh, dear. That's terrible.
Shh. There's Inspector Juve. No, it's all right. He's gone. You know, most of the sackings are because of his reports. If I was you, Denise, I'd be worried.
Why should I be worried?
Because he's too nice to you. Oh, no. He's seen us.
What are you doing here, Mademoiselle Cugnot?
We're just leaving, monsieur.
Go. Go! Not you, Mademoiselle Baudou. Oh. So, mademoiselle.
What is it, Monsieur Juve?
I keep seeing you two girls together. You like each other, don't you? I wonder what makes you two so fond of each other. Eh?
We were just having a harmless chat, Inspector Juve. And you've been so kind to me, monsieur. Thank you so much.
I'm not kind. Justice is all I know. But when someone is as sweet and as pretty as you... Come on, give me your hand.
Oh, no!
Oh, don't be shy, you silly girl. Be nice to an old friend. After all I've done for you, eh? Come here. Let me kiss you.
Leave me alone.
You'll regret it, mademoiselle.
Around 3 o'clock, Denise was sent off to fetch an order form in the silk department.
Denise!
Jean! Oh no, what are you doing here? What are you doing?
What do you think? I've been waiting for you. Don't worry, I haven't said anything to anyone. Just pretend you don't know me.
It's too late. Everyone's looking at us.
Let's just go and wait for the outside. You're outside in the square. I need 15 francs. Give me 15 francs, otherwise we're finished.
Shush, shush. Be quiet. Oh, they're listening. Quick, follow me. We'll take the stairs to the basement. Through this door.
Niels Brandy's got this huge knife.
Why do these incredible stories always happen to you?
Just this time, Denise, please lend me the 15 francs and I'll go.
Oh, shh. Someone's coming.
Well, well.
But Inspector Juve...
Nice behaviour, miss. Very nice indeed.
Oh, please. Let me explain.
Be quiet. Not another word. You can't get round me. I'm reporting you to Monsieur Bourdoncle right now. We'll see what he has to say about this.
Bourdoncle had a personal grudge against Denise. He had wanted her dismissed from the beginning. So he decided not to tell Mouret, in case he was met with another bout of weakness.
Where have you been?
Oh, in the workroom, madame.
Don't lie to me. I've had quite enough of your excuses, mademoiselle.
Madame Aurelie?
Yes, Monsieur Bourdoncle.
Wonder what they're talking about.
Bourdoncle doesn't look happy.
Someone's in trouble, that's for sure.
As long as it's not me.
Or me. Coming over.
Mademoiselle Baudou.
Yes, Madame Morley.
Collect your wages. Go.
Me? But why? What have I done?
We don't owe you an explanation, mademoiselle. What if all our sales girls met their men in the basement?
Oh, but it was my brother Jean.
Here she goes again about her brothers.
It's ridiculous.
Denise looked at them. Bourdoncle, who'd never wanted her there, Madame Aurélie, who didn't like her, and these girls who were so happy to have her thrown out on the street.
Very well.
So she left, without even looking back on this place where she'd fought so hard for so long.
Dismissed? What do you mean, dismissed? How dare you give orders without passing them by me?
Calm down.
Don't tell me to calm down. Remember, Bourdoncle, I am the boss. Is that understood?
Of course, Octave, of course. But when you've had time to think about it, I'm sure you'll realise it's better for everyone that the girl has gone.
Yes, you might be right. Anyway, I've got some good news. The Baron and I are going to become partners.
He's agreed to back you?
Yes. We're going to pull down the old neighbourhood and expand the store.
Oh, but that's wonderful, Octave.
Now let's celebrate. Mm-hmm. Champagne.
To the future, Octave.
To the biggest shop this country has ever seen.
Five o'clock was striking when Denise found herself on the pavement in the Place Gaillon. She stood dazed in the chalky summer light in the midst of the cabs and the crowd. And the disaster had been so sudden, she'd been pushed out so roughly, that she still clutched her 25.70 francs in her hand, wondering where she would go and what she would do. In The Lady's Delight, Denise was played by Georgia King, Mouret by Lee Williams, and Bourdoncle by Conrad Nelson. Baudou was played by Nicholas Blaine, Bourras and the Baron by Will Tacey, Jean by Stephen Hoyle, and Deloche and Colombin by Michael Hugo. Madame Baudou and Madame Aurélie were played by Claire Beck, Madame Defarge by Melissa Jane Sinden, Madame Marty and Pauline by Maeve Larkin, Genevieve and Madame Bove by Polly Lister, and Clara by Chantelle Dean. The narrator was David Hargreaves. The Lady's Delight was written by Emile Zola and dramatized by Karine Adler. It was directed by Stefan Escreet and produced in Manchester by Charlotte Richards.
And you can hear the second and final episode tomorrow at the same time.
The BBC search for new stand-up talent is back.
Welcome to the BBC Radio New Comedy Award 2013!
And this year, you can follow it from the start.
I'm here to party, so everybody hop on board.
Every Friday, we bring you the highlights and results from the nationwide heats, opening with Edinburgh.
Roger, dispatch, message understood.
If just one person laughs at my comedy, then I have completely failed.
The 2013 BBC Radio New Comedy Award begins here on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Don't broadcast that on Radio 4 Extra.
In tomorrow night's Comedy Club at 10:30.
That's going to be really weird for the people listening on the radio, isn't it?
Bumping into your ex is a commonly cited nightmare scenario, but doing so whilst on honeymoon with your new partner is positively disastrous. BBC Radio 4 Extra is lighting the touch paper and reigniting old passions in Noel Coward's sublime comedy, Private Lives. Boasting a stellar cast of Helena Bonham Carter and Bill Nye as old flames Amanda and Elliot, and Andrea Risborough as his new partner, Sybil. After discovering Amanda is honeymooning at the same hotel, Elliot is desperate to leave before his wife finds out.
But darling, please be reasonable. We only just arrived. Everything's unpacked. It's our first night together. We can't go away now.
We can have our first night together in Paris.
We shouldn't get there until the small hours.
Now, please, Sybil, I know it sounds crazy to you and utterly lacking in reason and sense, but I've got second sight over certain things. I'm almost psychic. I've got the most extraordinary sensation of impending disaster. If we stay here, something appalling will happen, I know it.
Private Lives is on Radio 4 Extra on Saturday afternoon at 4. It's over to Mel now. I'll be back in an hour with some comedy for you, including Martin Clunes in The Older Woman at 5:30.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Oh, hi there. It's Thursday. Here on the 4 o'clock show, I'm Mel Gedroych, and In today's episode of our current story, The Boy Who Sprouted Antlers, we'll hear how the school children are led on a merry dance.
The dancers got into line. The hobby horse, the fife player, and drum major stood ready at the side, and Miss Beddoes struck a commanding chord on the piano. Soon they were all bobbing and prancing about the stage in their own spirited version of the dance. And then they all left the stage to make way for the next group.
Sorry, I was a bit out of breath there. I was getting myself in the mood. I just thought I'd brush up on my Morris dancing skills. So it's a little wave here and a little jig there, a clack of my stick, and then a jingle of my bells attached to my woolly socks. Sorry, not really getting the hang of it. I'll stick to the funky chicken and leave the traditional dancing to the experts.
What we have here is dances that are unique and traditional to the town of Chipping Campden. You can go anywhere in the country and you won't see anybody else dance like we do.
Also on today's show, we'll attempt to answer the big questions in life, like what's the best dunking biscuit in the world?
We did in one time develop some products that were designed for dunking, as a matter of fact, that were sort of rugby ball shaped.
And how did they go down?
Well, they're not there now, so they didn't go down terribly well.
But before we get anywhere near those goodies, there's the small matter of another magical mystery tour to decipher. As ever, I will drip-feed you clues to our destination throughout the show. All you have to do, my friends, is guess where we're going. Yeah? I'm going to start you off today by telling you that we're heading to a superstructure that's nearly 2 miles long and 90 feet wide and is quite wiry in build. How about that for cryptic? Can you think where we may be heading? Don't worry, there will be more clues as we go throughout the show.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Our story all this week is The Boy Who Sprouted Antlers by John Yeoman. It tells the tale of a little boy called Billy Dexter, who amazingly grows a pair of horns. The book's published by Barn Owl Books and illustrated by the legendary Sir Quentin Blake. Quentin's probably best known for the many years he spent collaborating with Roald Dahl, and in 2009 the V&A Museum put on an exhibition of their work together. It seemed like a great opportunity to look back on his incredible body of work, and so BBC World Service presenter Rajan Datar joined him for a tour of his private art studio. Quentin began by describing the many strange writing implements he uses to create his work.
Well, these are actually Argus pheasant tail feathers. I did some drawings once for the World Parrot Trust, and it was very nice because they supplied me with feathers. I hope they weren't pulling them out of the parrots, but I mean, they gave me a very nice selection of feathers. Most of my drawings are done with a scratchy pen, which was originally invented for writing with, I suppose, in the 19th century. You could still get them. I use fountain pens as well. I use a Japanese brush pen, which is quite a more recent technology, but draws beautifully. And then I've gone back more recently to drawing with quills, which are very good to draw with because they're slightly unpredictable, you know. So
you like that.
It keeps you on your toes, you see, and you have to strive for the effect you want. And I also draw quite a lot with reeds as well, which are, you know, bamboo pens.
You can draw with anything, really. And you do.
Let's go to this desk here, which is with lights, overhead lights. And this is, I presume, where you do the actual initial drawings.
Yes, that's right. This is a light box standing on a plan chest. So in the drawers, there are current work, which is perhaps not finished yet. And what I do is I do a set of roughs for all those drawings before I do a finished one, so that I know what the shape of the book is and I know where the incidents are going to be. And then I put them on this light box, and on top of the rough drawing, I put a sheet of watercolour paper. And through the watercolour paper, which is quite thick, I can just sort of see the drawing underneath. So I'm not copying it and I'm not tracing it, but I have that little reassurance of knowing where everything is. And then I try and draw it as if for the first time, so that it's a surprise to me. And you kind of live it again as you're doing it.
When I sat down with Quentin to discuss his life's work, I asked him first